4 minutes past 12 o'clock. This is Midday, coming to you on the FM News Station.
PRI, Public Radio International.
Black Radio, telling it like it was, is made possible by a major grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with additional support from the James Smithson Society and the Public Radio International Program Fund, whose contributors include the Ford Foundation and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation.
From Radio Smithsonian.
Destination Freedom.
30 minutes of red hot beat me down, bring you up train to today.
This is John back on the scene.
Top of the morning.
Now I know you got to have some soul, because I got to be some soul.
I have a dream today.
If we hadn't been laughing, we couldn't have gotten a point across.
Everybody get up, boogie. You're digging WOL.
Black Radio, telling it like it was. A history of radio and the African-American culture. I'm Lou Rawls.
Softly and tenderly, the master is calling.
Roots are in gospel music, and that's me with the Pilgrim Travelers. Yeah, boy, we used to have a lot of fun on the road, especially in the South, because when you're traveling down there, you know, the folks, they take you to their house and feed you. Sometimes that can be detrimental because you eat too much, so when you get ready to go sing, you can't because you're so full, but that was all right. You know, religion has always played a big role in Black radio from the beginning. Radio listeners enjoyed African-American quartets, choirs, and preachers praising God on the air.
How sweet Harriet seemed, for days of which I dreamed.
Back in the 1920s, African-American quartets began broadcasting live on local radio stations. In Memphis, you could hear the IC Glee Club Quartet, and they were the first Black American gospel group to broadcast in Memphis.
Have I could hear my mind, pray again.
Kip Lornell is the author of Happy in the Service of the Lord, a book about African-American gospel quartets in Memphis.
They were really the precursor to the main group in terms of popularity to broadcast in Memphis, which was the Spirit of Memphis, certainly the most widely recognized of the Black American sacred gospel quartets to really appear out of Memphis.
Carnation Milk presents the Spirit of Memphis Quartet. Carnation Milk from Contented Cows bring you spirituals old and new in the famous fashion of the Spirit of Memphis Quartet. To start their program,
quartets were among the first form of Black American music to be broadcast regularly over the airwaves, partly because it was starting to become popular in the Black community to a great degree, but also because it was a safe form, an acceptable form of Black American music. At the same time that the IC Glee Club Quartet was broadcasting over radio station in Memphis, you had Ellington at the Cotton Club, which was doing some broadcasting that was a little bit more risky for broadcasters to some degree than to broadcast something safe like sacred music.
Just like a tree of a Lebanon, I forever stand,
my Lord.
Just like a tree of a Lebanon, oh, I forever stand, because I'm...
The Fairfield Four, they got together in 1921. And James Hill started singing with the group in 1946.
We was on WLAC every morning at 6:45 for Sunwave Vitamount Chicago. when we get through singing in the morning, we'd have to go out and get breakfast and come back to the station and be recording maybe 3 or 4 hours sometime during the day, getting transcripts for all those other 19 stations that we had. We come on in Philadelphia at 5:05 in the morning, and he went off San Antonio, Texas at 11:05 each night. So anywhere you went in the state, just about you could hear Fairfield. That went on for 12 years.
What a one day, as I was walking alone, well, you know I heard a voice, but I saw no one.
Certain African-American gospel quartets were heard from coast to coast over the networks.
Finer than to be in Carolina in the morning.
Yes, it's Carolina in the morning, and you're hearing about it from four of Dixie's favorite radio stars, Bill Johnson and his Golden Gate Jubilee singers from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Now the versatile Deep River Boys turn to a lovely Negro spiritual. Look away into heavens. I hope I'll join the band.
Going to see my mother, some of these boys. Going to see my mother, some of these boys. Going to see my mother, some of these mornings. Hope I'll join the band.
Until then, your friends, the prayer band leader and the Southern Airs, hope that the light from the lighthouse will shine in your life and home until time shall end. National Broadcasting Company, RCA Building, Radio City, New York.
Elder Lightfoot Solomon Michaud and his Radio Church of God first broadcast his Happiness Hour in 1930. He was known as the Happy Am I Preacher and was a coast-to-coast favorite for decades.
My precious ones, whether you believe it or not, amen. Words are spirits. Amen. Whenever men hear the kind of words that rejoice their heart, you can't keep them still. Amen. You must have your affection set on something that men can't take away. Yes. You must build your hope on something more substantial than the things of this present life. Yeah. Then when the things of this life fail you, yeah, you can look up and see yourself climbing up the golden stairway.
Bernice Johnson Regan is a curator emeritus for the Smithsonian and author of many works on the African-American culture. She's also the founder and artistic director of the a cappella quintet, Sweet Honey in the Rock. For her, like many other African Americans, the smell and sounds of Sunday morning are really sweet memories.
Sunday morning, you woke up and you could smell breakfast cooking. And we had two breakfasts I remember as a child. One was country fried steak with gravy, biscuits, grits, eggs, or fried chicken with biscuit, gravy, eggs. So you smell one of those getting underway in the kitchen, and you heard the radio. And the next strongest image I have is the Wings Over Jordan choir. And they would come on. And then Reverend Glenn Settles, he would start his intro.
Have mercy upon me, O Lord, for I am undone. I am wretched and most miserable. When night comes, I wish for day, and when the day breaks, I long for the night again. Unto thee and thee only I yield my aching heart. For in thy gracious mercy there must be a saving power for my troubled soul.
And they would go, cry to
and I cried.
Cried and I cried. Cried all night long.
And my whole little body would just be a buzz. There was something coming out of this brown box, and it was me. It was just the most thrilling thing. We never missed a program, and everybody listened to Wings Over Jordan.
And everybody put a radio in the window so that your neighbors could hear. There's Wings on the radio. Everybody had that didn't have a radio still got to hear Wings. That's the only time they really shared the radio. They didn't share it when the Shadow came on. They didn't share it when the Phantom came on. But when Wings hit this radio, everybody's window went up and the radio went in the window.
Over my head, I see trouble in the air.
My name is George G. Thompson. I'm the son of Olive Thompson, who was the soloist for Wings Over Jordan. My mother sang with Wings from its conception up until the mid-50s. The Wings Over Jordan was created and born here in Cleveland at the Gethsemane Baptist Church under the leadership of Glenn T. Settles. He was the minister of Gethsemane Baptist Church, and he wanted to take the choir out and sing. And the chief musician at that time was my grandmother, Elizabeth Narcissus Tyson, and she told him, no, Reverend, we can't take the whole choir. So she chose 40 members and called them Wings Over Jordan.
There must be a God.
This is the first church of deliverance, the spiritual church of love and faith.
In Chicago, there was something new in the air. The first church of deliverance began its Sunday broadcast in 1934. Now, Reverend Clarence H. Cobbs dared to let his choir sing Thomas Dorsey's gospel music.
My name is Ralph Goodpastor. I'm the minister of music at the First Church of Deliverance in Chicago. You know, Reverend Cobbs, when he moved here, his mother belonged to Pilgrim Baptist. Mr. Dorsey belonged to Pilgrim. Miss Sally Martin belonged to Pilgrim. So he and Mrs. Martin started the National Convention for Gospel Choirs and Choruses. And so the church is saying, can't sing that in here. This band played for Mulroney, and you gonna bring that in the church? No, indeed. So Reverend Cobbs was there, and he said, we'll try it. And they did.
Won't you remain standing as we sing for the evening hymn? We'll understand it better by and by.
Ralph Goodpastor is not the original minister of music, but he is the creator of the current format of the broadcast.
The format really was the idea that I kind of borrowed or stole or something. But I used to watch Arthur Godfrey on television. And I liked the way he did his program and was a master of ceremonies. And I wondered why we couldn't have a master of ceremonies and have a halfway point that people know who we were in that. And wrote the format. And we tried it. And we've been doing it ever since. I had no idea that so many churches had broadcast ministries. I was shocked. I still am as I sit here. I'm amazed. I'm also amazed at the format that they use because the copies from ours. And many people don't, you know, they broadcast, but they don't know that.
Black Radio, telling it like it was, from Public Radio International. By the 60s, there were local and syndicated religious programs on Black Radio all over the country. Messages of the Nation of Islam's Honorable Elijah Muhammad reached thousands of African Americans on Black Radio. and the recorded sermons of preachers like Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and the Reverend C.L. Franklin, who was the father of Aretha Franklin, were beamed into black homes across the country.
Through all of the repression and through all of the calamities that I've gone through, nothing will separate me from the love of God.
One memorable program was led by Reverend Ike.
Presenting the Hour of Blessings with Reverend Ike.
There is no telling.
There is no telling.
This is the Hour of Blessings broadcast with Dr. Frederick Ike Rincoter, better known to many as Reverend Ike.
In 1965, Reverend Ike decided to stop preaching hellfire and brimstone. Instead, he told his followers that they should get their pie in the sky right now. 10 years later, his programs were broadcast on 1,700 radio stations across the country.
You are listening to Reverend Ike. Some years ago, God gave me the blessing plan to help the people financially because, you know, more people are having money problems than any kind of problem. So many times, the money problem is the very thing that makes people sick and depressed. If people could get enough money to meet their needs and to pay their bills, they'd feel better and a lot of them would get well and do better in life.
Reverend Shirley Caesar and many other ministers across the country use their local broadcasts on black radio as an outreach ministry.
And a very pleasant good morning to those of you in our invisible audience. This is the day that the Lord has made. We are rejoicing right now.
We have many visitors every Sunday morning as a result of the broadcast.
It's prayer time now here in the city of Durham. Those of you that are going through some critical times in your life, I want you to know that if God have not worked out that problem, He's working on it. And all you've got to do now is just purpose in your heart, God, I'm just going to wait until my change comes.
Jesus,
Jesus.
I believe that if we can show our young people in some kind of way that there is something out there better than crack cocaine, that they can have a field in broadcasting, that they can be a gospel singer, that they can achieve and succeed, that they can be an engineer, if we can show them that God is of no respect to person, I believe that we can get our youth back.
In most cases, gospel announcers in black radio have much more freedom than their secular counterparts. They pick their own music, follow their own format, and develop a very loyal following of listeners through community service.
WHUR, 1029's the time. Going back 12 years, 1983, that's Shirley Caesar. Title song from her album, Jesus, I Love Calling Your Name.
Patrick Ellis hosts the leading gospel program in Washington, D.C.
In a lot of markets, you'll find that there are black radio stations that aren't all gospel, but they carve out a niche somewhere in their programming schedule to play gospel music. We're talking about the kind of station like this station, like WHUR, that's not an all-gospel station. It's been my experience that most of the program directors who come here basically tell me, hey, you know, I don't really know that much about gospel. You got it. You know, you've been doing a good job. Hey, it's your thing. You do it, which is fine with me. I personally would rather program my own show. You know, I play my music spontaneously, and I think that at least for me, it works because it is a religious show. It is a show that's centered around spirituality, you know. Community is especially important, I think, because of the nature of the show.
for the lonely today.
Monday would never end.
For the confused and frustrated today.
Martha Jean Steinberg is known for her command of the Detroit audience. As gospel recording artist Reverend Donald Vales will tell you, they don't call her the queen for nothing.
She took James Cleveland's Without a Song and made it her theme song, and every day she'd come on the radio for what they called inspiration time. She was not a religious announcer at the time. She was R&B. But something happened in that whole experience with the riot and so forth, and she became the voice of Black Detroit.
For our sick and our shut-ins.
Oh, a man ain't got friends.
I'll never forget, we're about to have a concert at Ford Auditorium, which seated at the time 2,900 people. And we went to her and asked for help, and she got on the radio and told the Queens Community Workers, listen, my children, the Corleas, are going down there to Ford Auditorium. It's going to cost $10. I'm going to have some tickets here. The tickets are such place. And I want you all to meet me there. And in 2 days, that concert was sold out.
Somebody need to hear some Sunday morning music. Let me hear you say, Sunday morning.
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 Hello, this is John.
And Vermia Phillips.
We're the husband and wife team in Los Angeles, California, on radio station KTYM, 1460 AM radio. We're celebrating 38 years of sending gospel music to the community. Really, we started in 1957 as a husband and wife team in the Los Angeles area, spinning records and praising God's name.
Well, thank you very much to you at the main control and to you in Radio Land. If you'll permit me to use this phrase once again, I'll just say to you, good morning, disciples of the air. This is Moments of Decision, Part 1. Your host and hostess, this is John.
And Vermia Phillips.
We are members of the Gospel Music Workshop of America with the Gospel Announcers Guild, Vermia's recording secretary, and I happen to be the sergeant-at-arms. We have over 600 announcers across America. Al, the Bishop Hobbs of Indianapolis, Indiana, he's chairman of the Gospel Music Workshop of America. We've been in it about 22 years and elected officers for 18 years, and we feel highly honored to be serving all the gospel announcers. Some call us DJs, but DJs only play records for money. But then we started out religious announcers, and then we finally settled on, we are known as gospel announcers in the radio broadcasting industry.
Today, there are Black gospel radio stations from coast to coast, and thanks to them, gospel artists have more exposure than ever before. But the Edwin Hawkins Singer started something in Northern California that put Black gospel music in an even larger arena. Oh Happy Day got heavy airplay across the country on secular radio programs.
Oh Happy Day.
Oh Happy Day.
Oh Happy Day.
Oh, happy day.
Oh,
happy day.
When Jesus wore.
And if you think that Oh Happy Day first got played on Black gospel radio, think again. Gospel singer Tremaine Hawkins is a witness.
Actually, an underground station, not even a major station, heard that particular album, and it had been out for 2 years prior to it becoming a hit. It caught on to regular radio stations through that underground station, and it was amazing how it took off. I mean, no one had a clue that this would ever happen. It just happened so quickly, and I don't think, quite frankly, that the gospel announcers and the people in the industry, as far as gospel is concerned, really knew what they had. You know, sometimes it takes that. It takes someone from the outside to really show you, you know, what you have here. I mean, you're sitting on, as they say, you're sitting on a gold mine and don't even know it. And I think that's what happened. And then when the secular industry got a hold to it and, you know, went crazy with it, then our own people in the church, you know, turned on us and started criticizing that particular recording because it was played in clubs, it was played in joints, so to speak, and it was, of course, on secular radio everywhere.
I sing because I'm happy.
I sing because I'm happy.
I sing.
I sing because I'm free.
His eyes on
me. His eyes on the spare.
That's the reason.
That's the reason why I sing.
I want to know if you can help me say glory.
Since Oh Happy Day, other black gospel artists have been able to cross over from gospel to secular formats. The Winans and Kirk Franklin and the Family have been very successful at getting exposure.
I find that even the urban radio announcers who play positive music are looking for something that sounds like the church. They're not looking for something that sounds like urban music with positive lyrics. They're looking for church music. They want to hear The Reason Why We Sing. They want to hear You Can Make It by Candy Staten. They want to hear something that sounds like the church.
Ray Boone promotes artists such as William Becton and Friends, whose gospel song, Be Encouraged, has been programmed into secular radio formats across the country.
Hallelujah.
We had no idea that Be Encouraged would turn into what it has. No way in the world could we have known. But again, it was the right time and the right song in the right place. You're finding that the audience is changing, that people are hurting, and in all different kinds of ways, that we're reaching out for something to heal. And you find that radio stations all across the country are now putting in that inspirational moment, or putting in that one or two inspirational cuts in the morning or during the drive time in the evening. And that is happening all over the country. It's not just a phenomenon in one or two areas.
Back in the 50s and 60s, FM was not the powerhouse it is today. If you wanted to hear black music, you listened to your favorite DJs on AM radio. Back then, most personality DJs were bigger than the stations that aired them. But in the late 60s, black-oriented AM radio was influenced by the success of white Top 40 formats. Top 40 programmed hit songs over and over and promoted the personality of the station a little more than the individual DJs. Black stations like WWRL in New York mixed the technical tightness of Top 40 with highly talented black personality DJs and the R&B hits of the day. They called it Soul Radio.
Yes, baby. Hi, it's Jeffrey Troy in the Morning Time, and I've got a question. Would you like to?
12:13 on the Jerry B. Show as we dedicate this next particular tune to a superfine foxy young lady by the name of Gail, who's with her man right now digging the sounds that we're putting down on the Jerry B. Show. Gail, this is to you from R.M., who wants you to know that if he had $1 million, girl, he'd give it all to you. But he has only himself, and believe you me, baby, that's worth more than $1 million.
It was literally a dream for me. It was kind of like, you know, being on the farm team and ready to go to the New York Yankees. So I was in heaven.
When he was 19, Gary Bird worked on WWRL under program director Jerry Boulding. His on-air experience at black station WUFO and Top 40 station WYSL made him a perfect player for Jerry Boulding's team.
What Jerry Boulding clearly wanted to do was to create a kind of pioneering concept of creating a very professional, slick black radio sound. I fit into that within the context that I had worked in a format that was styled on that order, but at the same time had the gist of black radio as well. In 6 months, we were like in the top five stations in New York with this particular format development. The trade magazines at the time, I mean, I remember one of them, the Gavin Report, said WWRL, whew. Literally the words, W-H-E-W with an exclamation point, because it was like, this is unbelievable. Billboard stories, all of that, because it just had not happened.
Play it on all the members of the Syndicate Social Club. All the members of the Syndicate, they doing a boogie on February 23rd. Yours truly, the Mighty Burner, will be there, and it's gonna be a bad boogie. Right now, I got the sound of earth, wind, and fire. It's called power. Everybody get up and boogie. You're digging WROL in Washington, the big one.
In Washington, D.C., WOL was the talk of the town. The station jumped into the market with a WWRL-style format. Bobby Bennett remembers what it meant to be a WOL soul brother.
You know, I was on cloud nine. I mean, this was the great WOL. And at that time, WOL, WWRL, they were probably the two, and, well, WVON in Chicago, they were probably the main R&B radio stations in the world. And to be able to even talk to them was, oh, man, that was heaven.
Jackson 5, 854 WOL Sound of the 70s time on the Jim Kelsey Show.
And I think what made our station so successful, OL so successful, we didn't have just one personality. We had six personalities who all wanted to be number one. So that meant we wasn't competing against the other radio stations. We were competing against each other. But we were called the Soul Brothers, and we were always together.
Sonny Jim Kelsey worked at WWRL before coming to Washington. He says the premiere of WOL was well planned.
We came into this town, I'd say, 10 days before we actually went on the air. And most people didn't realize, for 10 days, we rehearsed, we practiced, we did everything possible to be ready when we hit the air that morning. I was the first one to hit the air. I started at 12 noon. We were a brand new station, but what we did was we brought in all the national commercials we could find. I mean, we were playing them free for everybody we could think of. Because when we hit the air, we wanted to make the other stations think that we were so powerful and so strong that when we hit the air, we had all the national spots, Coca-Cola, the cigarette commercials, everything. Not only that, they made us sound good because all these commercials were produced. There were no raggedy spots.
Ooh, the simple things. Ooh, the simple things. Go better with Coca-Cola. Things go better with Coke.
We also, in New York City, carried all our personalities to New York City and made promos. We did everything so that we would sound professional when we hit the air.
And now, from Washington, more music on
2050 WOL. Sonny Jim Kelsey.
Ooh, gotta get away from you.
Come on now.
Fast as I can.
Weekend spectacular.
Baby.
Glad it's night in the pit. It's 8:31.
Get behind the wheel.
And if you remember the old sound, we talked all the way through every record. I mean, people would go to a record store to buy a record, and they'd play it for them. And they'd say, oh, no, I want the one where the guy does all the talking. But that was soul radio, the ability to talk and to find something to talk about on that record. Another thing we did, too, we always had our records a little faster than normal. That way we could play more music. You would have to have a very sensitive ear to realize what's going on, but our music was just a tinge faster, so that if we played a 2.5-minute record, it would be like 2:05 or something like that. But our listeners would never notice it. And that's how we were able to play more music and do more commercials. Oh, yeah, we had a lot of things going for us when we came to this town.
Sweet little baby boy.
Oh, that James Brown, something else. 5 minutes to the hour of 8 o'clock, sweet little baby boy, right here on the Sonny Jim Show. On the phone right now, we've got Mary G. Like to play the Whispering Santa Claus game. All right, Mary, let me give you two clues. First, he is a recording artist. Second, he is not a singer, so listen carefully.
Here is WOL's Whispering Santa.
I'd like to wish you a Merry Christmas. WOL.
Guess his name and you win the WOL Christmas Club. Here again is WOL's Whispering Santa.
I'd like to wish you a Merry Christmas from WOL.
All right, Merrick, remember now, he's a recording artist and he is not a singer. All right, who do you think it is, baby?
Nighthawk?
Yeah. Nighthawk is no recording artist, honey. I'm sorry.
Oh.
My goodness.
WOL.
You missed out on $40 being a clown, really. Now, don't you feel bad about that? First to two in a row on the Sonny Jim Show.
Good soul radio was well-organized chaos. It sounded wild and free, but it was tightly controlled. Soul radio worked the brilliance of the top black personalities at the time into the Drake format.
Bill Drake was a programming consultant. He basically created the second phase of a formatting concept of Top 40, which essentially took a jukebox premise and played the 40 hits over and over again.
Gary Bird is now the host and executive producer of a New York radio program called The Global Black Experience.
It was really a very innovative period, I think, for because the black radio slash Drake bolding idea that we were doing still maintained personality. See, that was the key element in it, that it maintained personality.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, your idol and his, Frankie Crocker.
Frankie Crocker, the dip in your hip man, was part of the Soul 16 at WWRL before becoming a WMCA good guy. Now, WMCA was a New York top 40 AM station. Frankie added a little color to the staff.
One of my favorite sounds that we played here on WMCA. Bet you're wondering how I knew about your plans to make me blue. Edson Playline is open at Plaza 29944. Call up, dedicate your record, and say goodbye to Fast Frankie in the City.
I was born and raised down in Alabama.
All the disc jockeys used to go in on Monday morning into a meeting with the program director, and we'd vote on records. And of course, I was still had my ties to WWRL and what was happening with rhythm and blues. And I said, we need to play this record. And I think at the time it was My Sharia Moore by Stevie Wonder. I said, we should play that. A record is a great record. And the program director said to me with unequivocally, hey, we have five black records. We don't want to confuse as to who we are. And I was thinking, it shouldn't be about the color of somebody's skin. It should only be that the record is a hit and people listen to it. Not only did I know blacks would listen to it, I knew whites liked it too. I just said, if I ever get the chance to program, it's not going to matter what color the skin the person is or the talent, I'm going to play this.
WBLS New York, stereo in black, where you hear Carmen McRae, Charles Mingus, Modern Jazz Quartet, Ron Carter, Richie Havens, Little Richard, Stokely Carmichael, Ray Charles, all happening now on stereo in black. WBLS, the total black experience in sound, 107.5 in stereo.
Frankie Crocker pulled together all the elements of his background to create what he called the total black experience in sound at WBLS.
Frankie Crocker was the nuclear builder of that format. You cannot take that from him, and you shouldn't.
Dorothy Brunson was one of the general managers of WBLS FM in New York.
I'm research-oriented. Frankie is gut, and he is brilliant at that time, was brilliant at selecting stuff. So we began with my research and his gut to put that thing together. But it was Frankie's music. It was Frankie's concept. What I did was took what he did by instinct and formulated into a process. I used to have young students go out in white areas, what I call crossover areas, and stand at the counters and see what records would be bought. And then we get the record store's report, and then we get the record company's report. And we would also send them into Harlem to stand at the counters. And we discovered some crazy things. One, that a lot of black people bought a lot of white records. People were buying the Beatles. Black people were buying Kiss, that rock group Kiss. Black people were buying Barbra Streisand. Like, whoa. You know, whole new strategy here.
Black radio telling it like it was from Public Radio International.
Paul Kelly, WBLS in New York. Don't burn me. It's Va Higginson at 115. Partly sunny this afternoon, high in the mid-40s. Partly cloudy tonight, low in the low 30s. Cloudy on Tuesday, chance of drizzle. Currently, 48 degrees in New York City. It's a Monday, February 5th, 1973. It's Joe Cocker, Woman to Woman.
A BLS had Vi on in midday. And they had Lamar on at night, and Frankie was in the middle. See, Frankie liked that. He wanted to have women on either side of him.
Pat Prescott is now the morning show host for New York's CD101. She used to work for Frankie at WBLS, but before she worked there, she was a fan.
And at the time that he was programming with that lineup, with Ken Webb in the morning, and then Vi Higginson in midday, then Frankie, then Lamar Renee, people thought that that was very risky. he had two women on. Wow. And I do believe that the presence of those two women had a great deal to do with their success and their uniqueness at that time.
It's WBLS, where black listening is special. It's FM for fine music, and it's the music of Bernard Pretty Purdy. It's called Good Living. And on WBLS, as I float through the notes this afternoon, is a young man.
Baby.
Yes, yes, what would you like?
Come over here and sit down and let me rap to you for a minute.
I'd like to know what you got to say.
I don't want you to think I'm conceited or anything, but I've been through quite a few changes. So if you really want me, you've just got to take my love.
In 1978, WBLS became the number one station in the Big Apple. They beat everybody on the air, but they weren't able to get the advertising dollars the stations under them were getting. Radio veteran Ed Castleberry.
Frankie told me, said, Ed, would you believe that we are the number one radio station in New York City? Number one station, the number one market, and still there are some white advertisers will not advertise with us. A lot of sponsors took the attitude that they were getting the black audience anyway. A lot of them believe that. But as any fool can tell you, nobody can get the black audience like a black radio station can. Nobody.
Black-oriented radio stations were forced to find different ways to present themselves to advertisers. Instead of saying black radio, they would say adult contemporary or urban radio. Veteran programmer Jerry Boulding.
The term urban came up when stations that were missing out on time buys wanted to get those time buys but didn't want to be classified as ethnic. There were time buys that would come down from certain agencies that would be marked no ethnic, no Hispanic, no black. Well, an urban station at that time might be able to get away with it. Not always, but might.
As program director of WBLS in New York, Frankie Crocker found that advertisers needed an education about his listeners.
We had to go out and tell people that the blacks who listened to us, the average had 2 years of college and was making $35,000, $40,000 a year. There were whites that were listening to us, and all these people were upward mobile people who were listening and would buy these things. But then what was happening? Black people turned on where they worked because there wasn't somebody coming on with jive talk, selling roaches and cheap wine, you know, and saying you didn't need any credit, and other people laughing and them feeling ashamed of the kinds of music they want. They were proud. They were proud that the people on the radio were intelligent and could speak to them and could speak to anybody. And they were proud to turn on, hey, that's our black stations. That's BLS. You don't know what's happening. Then the whites would listen to it. Hey, that's good. They got better music than this other station. The other station is jiving.
WBLS New York.
It is WBLS, where black listening is special. And if I may be so presumptuous, this is Stevie Wonder's next number one hit. You are the sunshine of my life.
You are the sunshine of
on-air personality, Pat Prescott.
And the things that he did at WBLS when Inner City Broadcasting first kicked off this FM thing, really, I believe, influenced so much of radio the way that we know it today. Probably the only other radio programming that had as significant an impact as Frankie Crocker's total black experience and sound was The Quiet Storm out of WHUR. You know, those two programming philosophies, I think, even today, still have a profound impact on black radio.
Hey, brothers and sisters, this is Robert Hooks. WHUR is a new thing here in Washington. It's the sound of black America.
Hi, yours truly, the Nighthawk here. 7-11, that's my natural born numbers, baby.
The news department recognizes the station's commitment to broaden and reshape the horizons of black society and its perceptions.
Howard University Radio, WHUR, will amplify the sounds, voices, and experiences of black America. We will be responsive to your needs, tastes, and desires. And I should know. This is Phil Watson, the general manager, and I pledge it.
Howard University, one of the nation's premier black institutions, used its FM radio station to create what they felt was an exciting learning environment. Kathy Liggins Hughes was a lecturer and student advisor. She eventually became general manager.
We called ourselves 360 degrees of blackness at that time, and that's exactly what we were playing, everything. And just because something is black, as you know, does not necessarily fit into a black radio format.
Kathy Hughes set out to tighten the format by applying the information she had learned about psychographic programming.
Psychographic programming is programming to fit a person's lifestyle. The thing that stuck out most in my mind was that when people came home in the evenings, they were more prone to want soothing, relaxing music.
The Quiet Storm.
Number one with Mellow Music.
And Melvin Lindsay.
On WHUR.
One of Kathy's most famous innovations at WHUR was The Quiet Storm. It was hosted by one of her students, Melvin Lindsay. It literally took the market by storm.
This is Patrick Ellis. Right now, I'm the senior producer here at WHUR FM Radio. I started at this station 25 years ago, 1971. In 1976, the city was taken by storm, and eventually the country, with this new nighttime radio format called The Quiet Storm. Why did it become so popular? I guess really it can probably best be summed up in, and I'm paraphrasing, in Melvin's words when he said he was given the assignment of going on the air, and he was not a radio announcer up until that point. And Melvin said to himself, gee, the only thing I know to do is to play some nice, soft love music during the evenings. And it worked.
Soft and warm, a quiet storm.
Once again, good evening. I'm Melvin Lindsay, and welcome to The Quiet Storm. And since we've opened up this evening, we've been featuring the music from Marvin Gaye. And certainly all condolences from WHUR go out to the family and friends of Marvin Gaye here in the Washington area.
Melvin Lindsay did The Quiet Storm at WHUR for 9 years. Then Donnie Simpson brought him to competitor WKYS under a $1 million contract. KYS was not the only other station to grab The Quiet Storm format. The format was copied all over the country.
WBLS, New York, 107.5. Kick back, and relax with The Quiet Storm.
The success of the new black FM formats was enhanced by the change in black music and the black community. Nelson George is the author of The Death of Rhythm and Blues.
And at that particular point in time in black music, you began having more ambitious kinds of arrangements. That was the era of your Barry White's, your Gamblin' Huff's, Marvin Gaye doing his more sophisticated music. Also some jazz fusion type things, your Grover Washington, it's a lot of Miles' stuff. So the music was growing, and it sounded better. This kind of music sounded better on FM. It was a very urbane, upscale kind of radio, which matched the music, because black music, again, was going through a period of great sophistication. Earth, Wind & Fire, the sound of it was going from the grittier kinds of soul music to a more... one that reflected a lot of the kind of sensibilities of middle-class black people, and also just the growth of the music itself.
It was a renaissance, FM renaissance. People, they went for that. And I think a lot of people don't know the difference between FM and AM, believe me. But they knew it was hipper to listen to FM, so they did that. It's the strangest thing I've ever seen.
This jockey Herb Kent experienced a transition from AM to FM in Chicago.
They just went for FM radio. Like at WVON, we were the top station in the market, and then one day they called us in and showed us our ratings. We were at the bottom of the barrel. The FM station, BMX, had eaten us up. They had eaten us up alive.
Not all the AM personality jocks were able to survive the switch. Radio veteran Jerry Boulding.
Now, you would think that the people that were on AM would just move to FM, but it didn't happen like that. What happened was the FM stations sprung up while the AMs were still on the air, and they had their own staffs, and there was no place for them. And then they had this thing, well, we're an FM, and we're different now. We don't talk the same. There were FM jocks. We're an FM jock.
And it was really strange. I think as I look back on it now, I really was very upset, and probably in some degree still am.
Former WOL AM soul brother Bobby Bennett.
They kept all of the jocks out who had done AM radio. They just like acted like, well, now you can't be on FM because you were on AM. And it really hurt me. It hurt me quite a bit because I was out of radio for a long time. I continued to do commercials and production work, but I was out of being on the air for quite some time. But, you know, I don't know what that was. It was some kind of stigma that they attached to because you were on AM, you couldn't make the cut on FM. Which was totally outrageous. I mean, it was ridiculous. But it was like, you're out of here. To me, it was just like you're saying, well, you know, here I was at maybe, I think I was 32 or 33 years old at the time. And you're telling me I'm finished? That I can't do this anymore? And this is what I'm trained to do? And basically, that's what it was.
In the late 70s and early 80s, I was one of the people in black radio that was a proponent of this more music, less talk. And it worked. The ratings went up. People said, got to thinking, man, they talk too much on that station. I like this station. They're jamming more. But what we did was we killed a generation of upcoming DJs.
Barry Mayo is now president and owner of Mayo Media Consulting Firm.
During all the 80s, there were not a lot of young guys and ladies coming up, being able to cut their teeth in smaller markets. Because everybody's trying to do this more music, less talk, and everybody's reading little liner cards. You know what I mean? And, you know, what goes around comes around. 10 years later, now we're looking for personalities, and there are very few. And if you look at the biggest personalities in black radio, most of them were in radio prior to 1980. I mean, Tom Joyner has got a syndicated radio show that beams across America. But Tom has been in radio from the 70s. One of the reasons that can get done is because there are so few truly talented morning disc jockeys that can make a difference.
Special thanks to Ward Olmsted, Sean Ross, Rob Frankel, Marlo Saudi, and Alan Leeds. Black Radio, telling it like it was produced by Radio Smithsonian. Jackie Gales Webb, producer. Sonia Williams and Lex Gillespie, associate producers. John Tyler, production manager. John Paulson and Matthew Sacchini, post-production engineers. And Wesley Horner, executive producer. Research by Universal Media and original music by David Ilva Sacker. I'm Lou Law.
Write Black Radio, Radio Smithsonian, MRC 645, Washington, D.C. 20560. Our internet address on the World Wide Web is www.pri.org. For further study, contact the Archives of African American Music and Culture at Indiana University, Bloomington. Black Radio, telling it like it was, is made possible by a major grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with additional support from the James Smithson Society and the Public Radio International Program Fund, whose contributors include the Ford Foundation and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. Special thanks to Sonic Solutions.
PRI, Public Radio International.
That does it for our midday program today. I hope you enjoyed the program. We're going to be rebroadcasting this documentary look at the history of black radio at 9 o'clock tonight, rebroadcast at 9 tonight on the FM news station. Today's programming is supported by financial contributions from Minnesota Public Radio listeners. That does it for midday today. I'd like to thank you for tuning in, and we hope you'll be able to join us tomorrow. Tomorrow, we're going to hear from one of President Clinton's top economic advisors, Treasury Secretary Robert Rubin, speaking at the Commonwealth Club. So better look at what the Clinton administration has in mind in terms of the economy. That's coming up tomorrow. Thanks for tuning in today.
I'm John Raby. On Monday's All Things Considered, Hennepin County's plans for a drug court. It's All Things Considered. Weekdays at 3 on the FM news station, KNRW-FM 91.1 in the Twin Cities.
You're listening to Minnesota Public Radio. We have a sunny sky, 30 degrees. The wind chill is 8 above at the FM news station, KNRW-FM 91.1, Minneapolis-St. Paul. Our Twin City weather forecast, scattered snow showers or flurries through the afternoon with a high temperature in the low to mid-30s.